music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name's Robin, and I am your host for today's program. We've got a great show planned. I have a couple of volunteers from the Active Bystanders Network here on campus to talk a little bit about, well, talk a lot about what that is and what they do and how it contributes to safety and consent, both on campus, but also extends into the community. So stay tuned. It's part of our broadcasting around SAM, which is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and happening here for the month of January on campus. Before we get into that, we're going to hear a song. Paula, who is the education coordinator at the SVSPO here on campus, has provided three songs, which I'm really happy about because Paula always has some great music to share. And we're going to listen to a track, and I'm going to let Paula introduce this one. So take it away. Let us know what we're hearing.
Okay. Yes, good morning. So we are going to hear Algo Bonito, which translates to Something Beautiful, by Ile and Ivy Queen. They are two Boricuas artists talking about the stop to, giving a stop to unhealthy relationships and asking the other to talk sweet things to them. For some of you that don't know what Boricua means, those are folks that are from AKA Puerto Rico or Boriquen. So let's listen Algo Bonito.
Cada vez que tiran los cañones, se pone pesada mi artillería. Todo el que me ataque lo devoro, como leona de cacería. Tienen las huevas hinchadas, si protesto me llaman subversiva. Y sé que mi rabia te incomoda, porque sé que me prefieres compasiva. Suena ese llamado que despierta, que nos libera el peso de encima. A ese monstruo le tiemblan las piernas, sabe que su derrumbe se aproxima. Se soltaron ya las yeguas del campo, bajando cuestas, curas de espanto, lágrimas. Y sin quebranto, grito que se vuelve canto. Dime algo bonito, quiero escuchar algo bonito. Dime algo bonito, quiero escuchar algo bonito. Dime algo bonito, quiero escuchar algo bonito. Dime algo bonito, quiero escuchar algo bonito.
Que las palabras lindas te rindan, o por mi descendencia y los ovarios que me guindan. Me importa poco de lo que me tildan. Nunca he creído que calladita me veo más linda. Cuando escupo es como fuego y ácido. Se ve que tu palabra o es como tu deflácido. Yo los mato rápido, el ritmo decapitó. Yo chambeo plazo automático. Yo nunca me la voy a dejar montar. Si es grande tu ego, el mío de tamaño colosal. Y la cobertura es intercontinental. Lo que tu camino por la marginal
escuchar algo bonito.
Algo bonito, papá.
Dime algo bonito.
Suavecito, ¿eh?
Quiero escuchar algo bonito. Dime algo bonito. Quiero escuchar algo bonito.
Ya tú sabes, papá.
Dime algo bonito.
Dile, dile.
Quiero escuchar algo bonito.
Dame viento.
TV Queen. La caballota. La perra, la diva y la potra.
A mí tú me hablas bonito, ¿ok?
Agla Bonito, a song here to start us off on Intravenous. As I mentioned at the intro, my name's Robin, and on the show today, I have a couple of volunteer representatives from the Active Bystander Network on campus. I have Samia Chowdhury and Summer Gill, and we're going to talk about the Active Bystanders Network. But first, let's hear from you guys about who are you, what do you study on campus, and just a little introduction so we get to know a little bit about you. Do you want to start, Samia?
Yes, sure thing. Good morning, people. I am Samyanu Chowdhury, and I am originally from Bangladesh. I am a second-year Simon Fraser student, and I'm majoring in criminology. I hope to pursue law in the future.
Great. Welcome to the show. Summer?
So actually, before I start, I would like to acknowledge that we are currently located on the traditional and unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including Tsleil-Waututh, Kwikwetlem, Squamish, and Musqueam nations. And I also apologize for my colonial way of pronunciation. And to reflect more, one needs to understand the meaning of what unceded means. It means that the land that we are currently right now was never surrendered or handed over in any way. Traditional and ancestral signify that the indigenous communities have been the true stewards of this land we are currently on for many generations. This land was stolen from the indigenous folks in the most brutal manner as part of the colonization by the English colonizers. And my name is Summer Gill, and my pronouns are he, him, his. And I realize and acknowledge that I am an uninvited South Asian queer settler on the lands of Coast Salish peoples. I was born and brought up in India, spent most of my life there, and moved to Canada in December 2018. And I'm also a fourth-year student at SFU majoring in health sciences and an active member of the Active Bystanders Network.
Great. Thank you. And welcome to the show. I want to start by learning what the Active Bystanders Network is here at SFU.
Active Bystander, or the acronym ABN, is a volunteer opportunity for students to create positive change by engaging in sexual violence prevention and education on campus.
I'd say Active Bystander Network is also a peer education program as well, in which volunteers can learn how to recognize and intervene appropriately to prevent harmful situations. For instance, the people in ABN, they promote, they try to stop sexual violence, and that is done through educating people and providing resources and support to create a culture of care and consent on campus around here.
I love that idea of creating a community of care and consent on campus that trickles out into bigger community efforts, right? what spurred your interest in the ABN, and how did you get involved?
I think that's a good question, and the most important thing is setting the intentionality behind, like, why we are a part of this. So based on some life experience, I've gotten myself in situations where I felt uncomfortable and witnessed others feel the same in some sort of their body language, but haven't been able to actively engage myself or as a bystander due to the lack of maybe knowledge and resources. So I came across this opportunity of becoming the part of the Active Bystander Network, or ABN, that works closely with the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, and wanted to learn more about how to navigate the difficult conversations and equipping myself with the appropriate resources and the rightful information to stand for people, and like even for myself. And I applied through there's a website called myexperience.sfu.ca. So that is how I got involved and looked under the opportunities and just applied, like the resume, cover letter, and stuff. So, yeah.
And Sammy, was your experience similar?
For me, I would say that I was drawn to the ABN because of the core beliefs and movement it supports and it stands for. I have always been really into spoken poetry and writing about the difficult conversations Summer was talking about. I've always written about those back when I was at home as well. And I would, I realized that I really liked doing that. I really liked speaking my mind, even if it made people uncomfortable sometimes. And so when I came here, I saw that ABN provided me an opportunity to do so. And joining ABN was kind of like my way of giving back to the community. So I reached out through the SFU website and I decided to get involved.
I will ask again at the end of the show what the website is and how to, you know, how folks in the community and on campus who are listening can, you know, plug in and find out more information. But maybe just because we're also talking about that right now, do you want to give more information on the My Experience? This is the first time I've heard about that sort of portal or whatever. Maybe I'm not the only one.
So to get involved, the SVSPO will be recruiting for the 2023 and 2024 cohort in April 2022. All applications need to be completed for it to be accepted, and the volunteering listing will be posted on my involvement page. For FIC students, on the other hand, because a lot of them do not know about it, they can submit an application form that they can find in the SVSPO website, www.sfu.ca/sexualviolence. Also, students can send an email to our coordinator, Paola, if they have any questions.
Great. Yeah. I can also post links to you know, hot links to things like that when I post the audio for this show. But sometimes it's good to both hear and see. Covering all kinds of the learners. In terms of the network and being a part of it, what does it mean to you, or what has it meant to you to be part of the Active Bystanders Network?
Sure. So for me, an active bystander essentially actively kind of observes a given situation and tries to analyze the potential harm and acts in some way to prevent the situation. Of course, the first and foremost rule of being an active bystander is looking for your safety, for personal safety first, as if you feel safe enough to do so in that situation to intervene in there. Active bystander is not just standing for harmful situations such as sexual violence. It is also about standing up for something that seems unjust or in a way suppresses the voice of people, especially the marginalized folks, which could include actively bystanding against certain microaggressions at work, at home, with family members, or in a friend group?
For me, I think being an active bystander, as I said, I really like speaking about these matters. I want to give my two cents on this. So it's a very personal experience for me. It's more about the satisfaction that I get after the feeling of extending my hand when someone is in need. And I feel like being part of the Active Bystander Network and this amazing team, it means being an advocate for sexual violence prevention. For me, being a part of this initiative is standing for all that I believe in.
I can't help but wonder about confidence in some ways, you know, and the sort of level of increased confidence that you have to sort of step into that voice that you're talking about, Samia, and you know, the different tools that you have to sort of, you know, intervene and those kinds of things. I can remember, you know, saying to some man on the street something like, I'm watching you, I see you, right? And this interaction that's happening with this woman, and I yelled it across the street and just felt myself, you know, kind of shaking in the moment, right? And that these tools and the participation can really lead to a lot more confidence and security in how to do it, why to do it, when to do it, how to do it, and all that kind of stuff, right? Are there some key strategies that you can share about that? Like, you know, what would you say to a person like me in terms of stepping in and dealing with these kinds of situations?
For sure, yeah. I think that's exactly what my idea was, to be involved as also as part of ABN, to equip myself with those strategies, or like what are the rightful resources or the right knowledge to intervene and how to navigate those situations. Because many times I have witnessed myself and caught myself in situations where I've seen like a pregnant human walking into a bus, and then on public transit, you know, those seats in the front, they are reserved for people with special needs. And I can't, like, in the past, like, I couldn't speak up. And that, but it made me very uncomfortable in my own body that I need to do something, but like, how do I do it? And like, also, as I said, personal safety. If I see a Caucasian, cisgendered, heterosexual man, masculine man in front of me, I do not feel safe enough to do so in my own color. And those are some of the systemic factors and everything that we all are very much aware of. So, the key strategies that I think we can discuss about, they're like, we are here at SFU as part of Active Bystander Network. We have like some four strategies that we call as the four Ds of active bystander intervention. So I can walk you through like four of them. So one of the D stands for direct. So direct basically calls for calling out the negative behaviors and ask the person who's perpetrating that harmful situation to stop. Like, you basically call them out directly one-on-one. And the other strategy we could talk about is distract. Distracting, or like changing the focus of the conversation or the situation by using out the norm strategies. So, for example, like you see someone, you know, in a harmful situation based on your understanding of the situation, of course. And you can maybe go up to them and like talk loudly or something, or like, oh, you are my friend. Oh, can you help me with something? And just, you know, faking it. So that's how you're like trying to distract the situation, takes away the focus away from that situation. The other D could be delegate. So a delegate is seeking help from someone if there are like other people or you feel there's someone has more authority in that situation and that surrounding you find yourself in, who witness the negative behavior. And the last D is delay. Which I think could be used by most of the folks in terms of your looking out for your personal safety. So delay is the opposite of direct. Like instead of like calling out the person right away, you kind of delay that situation. You do not intervene right away, but you try to check in with the person who has been infected by that harmful situation as a follow-up, like if you're doing okay, if you need any assistance or I can help you or in any way. So that's another way, and delay. But I can also talk about, like, recently I've caught myself using the direct strategy quite often. I don't know, maybe because I've come across many situations and then maybe gained some more confidence when I felt safe enough, of course, to do so. For instance, in situations when I'm hanging out with friends and someone passes a remark about someone's body, I try calling out the person and let them know that their action is inappropriate or disrespectful in a nicer way, of course, like, yeah, maybe, you know, that is not okay. And it's something like I take very seriously because, like, being a person of color, microaggressions can be very triggering and could be like triggering your past trauma or something. As we know, like, you know, we never know everybody's journey. So the people in the situations I've seen, like, they're like, oh, it's just a small remark. You're reaching somewhere. Like, it's not a big deal or something. But hardly do they realize that these microaggressions, that's what we call them, micro, these are just foundational grounds of a big problem at the top of a pyramid. So if you picture it in your minds, you are basically passing all those microaggressions or like promoting transphobia, homophobia, or any kind of racism. They're all the foundational pillars of this huge pyramid. And big acts of violence take place at the end. Trust me, when I talk about homicide, suicide, they all come into play. For instance, as I mentioned about the body, delay is another way I use to intervene in situations, for sure. Because of my own intersectionality as a South Asian queer settler, I feel intimidated, as I mentioned earlier as well, at certain establishments. For example, the ones which are primarily meant in some way or the other, like for cisgendered heterosexual humans. So I go for the delay strategy. And like, if I see someone creating a harmful situation there, as I said, with my intersectionality, I do not feel safe enough there. So I check in with the person if they're doing okay at a later stage. Those are the, I think, direct and delays are some of the strategies I personally use.
Right. Those are your favorite sort of go-to ones. And it makes sense, right? Because sometimes, you know, and I really appreciated, you know, how you keep bringing the topic of personal safety up, right? And that sometimes it is safe to be direct, and then sometimes, you know, it's not, and that really is the sort of pivot point about how you choose one of those D's to engage. Anything that you would like to add there, Samia?
For starters, I would say that different strategies work for different people. For me personally, I distract the situation by interrupting the incident or the interaction, maybe by talking to someone too loudly, as Summer mentioned, or going over and sitting next to them just to show that I am there and they have my support. I also try redirecting the conversation when I feel like it's getting too targeted or hostile. And in Canada, I have found that it is easier to use the delegate of the 4Ds and ask an authority for help or to inform them, because mostly it helps. And when I'm looking to delegate the situation, I feel like it is immediately minimizing the danger for both the person and for myself. But the strategy I would say that I find most challenging is direct. It's because I do not like confrontation. It gives me a lot of anxiety. And so I try avoiding it at most times. But when it's necessary, I know I need to step in sometimes. However, I would also like to mention to always please consider your physical and emotional safety and the safety of others while intervening and after the situation. Don't choose to intervene in ways that put you or anyone else at risk of harm. Calling the police is a good idea, but it's not always the best answer. So we have to think who mostly gets affected if that happens. So it is very necessary that we are mindful of our boundaries and we get to know the resources available. And I would suggest you do that as well, to get to know the resources available to you and to others on and off campus in case you ever need it.
Fantastic. I also appreciated the advice about delegating, and you know, sometimes we need to delegate to a higher, I don't want to say higher power, that feels weird, but you know, something outside of ourselves, but that it's also sometimes not appropriate, right, in this situation. And I know on this show we've talked a lot about a report that's come out recently from the BWSS called The Color of Violence, that talks very much about you know, how the services for people who experience violence, who you know, don't have access to the kinds of services they need, based on color and different stages of intersectionality. So that is a really important point, I think, in terms of these 4 D's that we're talking about. You're listening to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name's Robin, and I am in conversation with two members, representatives of the Active Bystander Network here on campus, Samia Chowdhury and Summer Gill. And we're going to take a little song break right now and come back to our conversation about the network and what the network does. We're going to have a listen to another song, and I've got Paola, who's the education coordinator for the SVSPO, in studio also, and Paola's going to introduce the song that we're going to hear next. So here you go, Paola.
Awesome. So thank you, Robin. So the next song... the next song that we're going to listen next is No Es No, which means... No Means No, by Guatemalan artist Rebecca Lane, one of my favorite Latin American artists. And this song talks about the importance of consent and, yes, the importance of consent, the importance of others to learn that when you say yes, it's a yes. But it also is a song to reaffirm to folks that when we feel insecure, just to put out our boundaries out there. In the words of Rebecca Lane, she shares that many times we don't say no because the situation doesn't allow us, but we don't say yes either. So, and if we don't say yes with desire and with pleasure, then that is a no. So let's listen No Is No by Rebecca Lane.
Salí la otra noche contigo a bailar. Bailamos pegadito hasta mucho sudar. Me quisiste dar un beso y yo me quité. No me sigas insistiendo, ya te dije en él. Me mandaste un mensaje por el Instagram. Me dijiste cosas raras y te dije chao. Me seguiste insistiendo por el Messenger. Que es esta necedad si ya te dije en él. Cuando digo no, no significa sí. Cuando digo no, no significa. Todo libro ha leído. Que no cree en la monogamia, que le quita libertad. Lo mismo le dijo a mi amiga y le dijimos bye. Dice que es famoso y artista reconocido. Que otra como yo en la vida ha conocido. Que aunque soy más pequeña, soy madura pa' mi edad. Mis amigas me advirtieron y le dije bye. Cuando digo no, no significa sí. Cuando digo no, no significa insistir. Si no digo sí, entonces es un no. Es tan difícil entender.
And we're back here on whoa. Getting a little ahead of ourselves there. Welcome back to Intravenous here on CGSF 90.1 FM. My name is Robin, and as I was mentioning, I'm here with a couple of members or representatives from the Active Bystanders Network on campus, Samia and Summer. And we've been talking about some of the key strategies that we can use to sort of intervene in situations where, you know, there might be someone at risk, and to step in. I don't want to have to ask about sort of incident rates and how many times you've been in a position where you've had to intervene. But can you give some examples maybe of times where you have in a general sort of scope and what the outcomes have been, and give listeners sort of an example of, you know, what different scenarios might look like?
Sure.
Oh, hold on. There we go.
Sure. So I have seen myself, like, I think couple times, I don't, again, have the number of incident rate, of course, but I consider addressing microaggressions in a group setting with friends, co-workers, or family members, as also part of actively intervening and challenging a certain norm or stereotype or the narrative that others consider as like the normal or something. So there I use the direct strategy, and like most of the times, again, as a very subtle way that they listen, as well as they, but most of the times they do not pay much attention to it. Because again, if I want to use the direct strategy, also I don't want to put myself in a situation that's confronting and it's harmful for me as well. So having intervened, for example, at Tim Hortons or public transit, talking about the outcome of my intervention, I would say mostly it has been positive with strangers in comparison to my friends, family, and colleagues. I remember at Tim Hortons, there was a Caucasian woman looked like the going to high school, and they had a very rude experience. They shouted at the employee for like making their order wrong or something, and they escalated the matter a lot. And I could see the employee, offering that they can make a new one right away. And I didn't see a problem with that. The person is ready to listen to you and like they are trying to conflict resolve. But this person just wanted to, I don't know, vent or whatever, but the action was completely not appropriate in front of me. So I used the delay, as in when the customer left and I checked in with the employee. I'm like, are you okay? Do not take it too hard. I know it's personally, if somebody tells you like it doesn't like, you know, take that pain away or like that experience away. Of course, the hurt is there, the experience is there. But all you can do is just offer some kindness or some kind words. And mind you, like literally, if you tell someone on your way to transit or something, even a stranger, though it's hard, but like somebody tells you like, oh, you look so great today, or like, you know, you love your smile. Those are like acts of kindness. And these days, like everybody scrolling through the mainstream media, like TikTok or Instagram reels and stuff, they see those kindness videos and stuff coming up, and those are great. So that was one experience of like Tim Hortons. But others mostly have been like in a group setting with friends, going out for dinners, and if they're talking about I come from India. So in India, we have this unfortunate situation of class divide based on the caste systems, which I completely do not follow, or like I stand against it. And they'll be like generally like very casually talking and like making some fun comments about it. Because like in that group setting, I could realize I as a South Asian, I know if I have to be ranked according to the caste, I am also like privileged in terms of the rank or something if they do it, which I do not like that at all. But that's also a very important point, I think, here, like understanding the power you hold with your privilege and different aspects of your identity. You hold different privileges, different powers over different things, though you have like different ways to be discriminated against too. So I call them out. So, and then they're like, again, very casually taking my comment. I'm like, I don't think that's appropriate. And then they're like, Summer, you don't have to take it too personal. We're just like joking. But as I said before our break, to the song break, that we are not really using that critical lens. Not everybody needs to be too critical. We do not expect everybody to have the same capacity to like think about things. But I want people at least to think about the harm that they are perpetuating in direct way, indirect way, or at the micro levels. So that's why I said like my positive outcomes have been mostly through strangers who do not know me. Even the small act of kindness or something has been reported in a like positive response against my friends or like my close ones, which is very unfortunate though. And I'll just say that if someone apologizes, even after like when you intervene, the most important point there is like your body language and the genuinity of your apology and the intentionality behind it, so that you understand what you are apologizing for. not just casually, like, you know, throwing up sentences and words which have no meaning to it.
So much in there to chew on. My goodness. And I resonate with, you know, the difficulty of sort of calling your family on things, right? Yeah. Think about my dad and, you know, how stubborn he can be, and how my sister and I have to really go at him sometimes about changing his dinosaur beliefs. And I have my own dinosaur beliefs, but, you know, it... yeah, it can be really challenging with family and friends and loved ones. And I also appreciated how, you know, part of what we are culturated almost to think and feel is that, you know, we can joke, quote unquote, joke about things, and it makes it okay, but it really almost makes it worse in so many ways, right? When we joke about things that are very serious matters for folks. So, yeah. Samia, what do you have to add in terms of experience and outcomes?
Unfortunately, I would say that I've been in situations like that many, many times. Back in my home country, Bangladesh, the awareness circulating topics like consent or sexual boundaries, it's very unusual and vague. And therefore, incidents tend to occur more often. And in that case, I kind of have to step in sometimes and intervene. The incidents can range from just people, friends making quote-unquote jokes and... to people catcalling other people, or to people not changing their beliefs. And it can range to very difficult and very harmful situations. And however, since moving here, I had to step in. I think I had to do it just a couple of times. One time having to get the authorities involved. It was very scary for me. But sometimes I did think about my safety. I had a friend beside me as well. So that was some support. And when I got in the car and I contacted the authorities, I could feel myself trembling. But I knew that that one little action, one little phone call can change the course of someone's life. And when the balance comes to that, there's two scales, and when the weighing is way off, it's just all the events that's gonna follow after someone's, because trauma changes people. And I think it has never gotten that serious back home, but in here it has. And I felt like the authority took very, very good measures, and therefore I always go, when stuff gets difficult, I would, I use the strategy of delegate. Usually the outcome in situations that are not that severe is the perpetrator stopping or instantly removing themselves, because maybe because they dislike the additional attention they're getting. So mostly it works, but it's still a very difficult situation to be in.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your experiences there. What does having active bystanders in the community mean to the community? And how do you see your response mattering?
As I said, I am a criminology major. And so I've taken a lot of psychology courses, and psychology talks a lot about bystander effect. It was this phenomena, that was this concept that was introduced after this incident with a woman, Kitty Genovese. I would suggest you look into it. It shows the epitome of human failure, I would say. Because of that, many psychologists wanted to study that, and bystander effect mostly shows because of this phenomena, this is the cause of many crimes going unreported. The diffusion of responsibility, the thinking that there are a lot of people here, maybe someone else is going to step in, the waiting, and then no one steps in. And the incident just occurs and nothing happens. So the perpetrator's actions are just reinforced. So it creates a very unsafe and unreliable society. And by being active and conscious bystanders who step forward in times when action is called for, I feel that the society we live in becomes much less dangerous and much more aware. And when one person starts doing it, I feel like more people start doing it. And so we in turn create a community of, as I said, care and consent. And having active bystanders is like having protectors in the community who empower and support others relentlessly. And as for why bystander response matters, I think it is very essential because people who experience sexual violence or other forms of harm are left very frustrated and angry because the bystander, no one intervened. So they feel very alone and unsupported. And I feel as though no one in the society or community should feel that way. By being an active bystander and not just being passive, it also helps build a community and culture of care, one that recognizes the rights of each of us individuals to live free of violence, harassment, and microaggressions. When bystanders are silent, the person who has done the harm, as I said, they might think that the behavior they're conducting, their misdemeanor, it is acceptable. And therefore, their actions are reinforced and they're going to do it again. So putting a stop to it might prevent future cases from occurring. And when bystanders don't intervene, the victims, or I hate using that word, so I would say the people impacted by the microaggression or the harassment may think it's their fault. And no one should think that something bad that has happened to them is their responsibility, because it's not. So I feel like being an active bystander, it's very important because of that.
I love so much of what you said in there. And it makes me think about how this piece of active bystandering in is kind of a piece of restorative justice, right? And how those two kind of principles get linked into community accountability and redressing harm that was done, and you know, making sure that that is understood by all parties and that kind of thing. So that's really important, and I appreciate that. Summer, what about you?
I guess Samia has mentioned really, really great points and great ideology, and I can kind of really, really resonate with those. So I think for me, having active bystanders definitely makes a difference in the community, especially for the marginalized folks whose voices have been mostly suppressed by the system and the status quo of the society. Having active bystanders in the community assures care for each other, kindness for each other, and amplifies those unheard voices. Also, having them could help validate people of what they are feeling or experiencing in a given situation while having someone by their side. Because often survivors do not feel not validated, but like they do not feel supported, or they start to self-blame a lot. as if, oh, somebody will not believe me, I should not reach out. There's a lot of stigma associated with different cases of harmful situations that they have been in, or the way they have been impacted. There's a lot of like shame, guilt associated with it. Again, as I said, because of the status quo of the society, how the world exists. So all those different factors shape your thinking as well. And reaching out for help is a big, big effort. Reaching out for, or even like disclosing your information to someone that, oh, this happened to me, takes a lot of courage, takes a lot of effort. So the least someone can do is lending an active ear to listen to someone and believe them. That's the first thing. Believe what someone's telling you. So I think, yeah, the terms of outcomes, that presence of other people creates a diffusion of responsibility, because there are other observers, individuals do not feel as much pressure to take the action, as Samuel already mentioned about the bystander effect. The responsibility to act is thought to be shared among all of those present.
What I was thinking about when you were just talking, Summer, was even just doubt, right? Like, even before we get to the point where we might feel shame or, you know, some kind of big, grander emotion, it's like that nagging doubt, like, did that really happen? You know? And to have somebody share the witnessing of that and confirm that we're not feeling like we've just gone mad or something is an important factor, I think, in these things, because you know, the culture leads us to believe things about ourselves, but also believe things about the ways that we, you know, that it's okay to be treated, right? Which are complete nonsense in so many ways, and so vastly we have to struggle sometimes about what these two opposites and polarities look like, right? What we know in our heart to be true, and, you know, what we're taught and conditioned to sort of deal with and live through. So such important stuff. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our conversation, but I want to make sure that I haven't missed anything that is, you know, critical information.
Sure. I guess just a while ago when you mentioned about that first feeling of that, did that just happen or something, I think that's very important to address, because it just suddenly made me realize I was in this headspace now that, yeah, when I have been impacted, and I personally have been in that harmful situation in the past, and yes, I have also had those thoughts. What did just happen? Like, did I hear that right? And those were literally the same questions I asked myself. So I get key information before we end time period that we have today. I guess it's relevant to mention that being an active bystander is not easy, and that it takes practice and a lot of courage. Systemic barriers of bystander intervention, like the social location of the bystander, race, disability, gender, sexual orientation, identity, and many more, they can all influence if a person feels safe or comfortable enough to speak up or support others. Also, how rape culture has taught us not to notice situations that are problematic, higher levels of benevolent sexism, and rape myth acceptance are more likely to perceive situations as low risk. And in terms of substance use, failure to notice and perceive the depth of the situation has been identified as a large barrier in student populations, where, for example, alcohol is often involved, like parties, clubbing, bar hopping. And second, even if bystanders do notice that event, they may not perceive it as high risk that is worthy of intervention again, due to those different factors, or maybe you are just reaching, oh, that's you are just overthinking, or that's a joke. People often help if they are certain that a situation involves abuse, or maybe whether it's like, mostly I've seen like physically, if they see that, a physical abuse, and may fail to look for more subtle cues that are indicating that a person is at risk. So this perpetrator could be stopped in some way, or the situation could be prevented with those subtle cues, but they're often overlooked, because then you are thinking about, oh, maybe we're overthinking. But at the same time, I would also know, like, sometimes we don't know what is the dynamic between in that situation amongst those people that are involved. So third, bystanders may lack personal responsibility, and they may think this is none of their business. And many times, the lack of personal responsibility could be influenced by a number of factors, such as moral perceptions of that person affected. Example, promiscuity or intoxication of substances involved, and diffusion of responsibility or individual characteristics of the bystander. And however, these barriers are important to mention. There are still ways to make a difference in someone's life and build caring communities around us.
We have 3 minutes left. Samia.
I would like to keep it short. I'd just say that kindness is always necessary, welcome and appreciated. We never know what silent battles each of us are fighting. Therefore, a few words of kindness or like a few acts of kindness makes a gigantic difference, and it's worth remembering. And being an active bystander is one way to start. Also, having these conversations is one way to start as well. I have loved being a part of today's conversation, and I really appreciate what you guys do, how you guys get the word out there.
Thank you. Tell us where to find the Active Bystander Network on the great old internet.
So as I already mentioned, the volunteering listing will be posted on my involvement page, as SVSPO will be recruiting again for the 2023 and 2024 cohort. And FIC students can submit an application form that they can find in the SVSPO website, www.sfu.ca/sexualviolence. Also, students can send an email to our coordinator, Paola, if they have any questions.
Fantastic. Look at us bring it in under the wire there. Thank you both so much. I hope that that everybody listening learned as much as I did today. That was really fascinating and informative, and I hope that you're encouraged to sort of utilize some of these tools and strategies. And, you know, think about the ways that we interact with each other in the community so that we're building one of more care and consent in the world. My name is Robin, and I've been joined today by the Active Bystander Network representative, Samia Chowdhury, and Summer Gill. And this has been Intravenous for today. Thanks so much for listening. And do stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming right up.